Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight on Derby City Film Chat, stop your grinning and drop your linen. Filmmaker and sci-fi author Steven Zimmer joins me to talk about his recent book release, Crown of Vengeance, and upcoming film, Santa Boy. We may also delve into the state of sci-fi indie film, but we only have 15 minutes. Well, now that I think about it, there are very few indie sci-fi films being made, so I think we can spare 30 seconds. I'll also welcome girl number three, director Herschel Zahn, and lead actress Julie Strebel to talk about the film premiere at Horror Hound Convention in Cincinnati over the weekend and tell you how you can see it in Louisville next month. Don't worry, Ripley, my team of ultimate badasses will protect you. Enjoy the show.
Live from No Budget Studios in Louisville, Kentucky, it's Derby City Film Chat. And now, here's your host, Chris Rommel.
Red Dogger, get her in. How you doing? Awesome. Welcome to the show. I'd say it's a special Thanksgiving edition, but I have nothing special nor Thanksgiving-related planned for tonight's show. So you're just going to listen to show number 44. Welcome to Derby City Film Chat for November 24th, 2009. Thanks to the feds for the intro music. Thanks to blogtalkradio.com for the format. And thanks to you for listening. I guess I can say I'm thankful. I'm thankful for you for listening. Happy Thanksgiving. We come to you live at 9 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday for the benefit of those not listening live. Or you can visit our show page for archived episodes or subscribe on iTunes and never miss a show for the benefit of those listening live. Join the Film Chat group on Facebook or visit bobrogersgroup.com and click on the Film Chat link on the homepage to find out information on upcoming shows. Email your thoughts to us at derbycityfilmchat@yahoo.com. Great show for you tonight. 9:15 author and filmmaker Steven Zimmer will join us to talk about his recent book release and upcoming short film and the state of sci-fi indie films. 9:30, Girl Number 3 just had its world premiere at the Horror Hound Festival, convention festival, this past weekend up in Cincinnati. Julie Strebel and director Herschel Zahn will join me at 9:30. Plus all the usual news and notes. Appreciate you all spending an hour with me tonight. Here we go.
Derby City Film News.
Got a lot going on here in Louisville and the surrounding region the next week or so. Bear with me, get my notes together. This portion of the program is where we give you all the news and notes of the things going on in the area in the coming week. It was kind of redundant. The Derby City Film Festival is now accepting submissions for its second annual festival, which will be held February 19th through the 21st, 2010. The Derby City Film Festival is Louisville's largest international independent film festival of all genres, short films, international, feature, documentary, and experimental films. Submission forms are available on the website at derbycityfilmfest.com. Submissions are accepted until December 1st, which is next Tuesday, and there are no submission fees. You have to have your film postmarked by December 1st, so you want to keep that in mind. If you're holding on to a film, you're finishing up a film, you have another week to get that into us. Films are pouring in, which as they usually do at the last minute, and our screening committee is very busy getting those done. We've got some updates for you. First, December 15th is when we'll release our official selections. We're having a press conference on the 15th, 10 a.m. at the Clifton Center, 2117 Payne Street, which is where the festival will take place. Some interesting developments. Apparently the economy has not been so kind to one of our presenting sponsors, so we are no longer opening at the Palace. The budget for what the business that was our sponsor, who asked to not give out the details as they're trying to stay in business, but we are moving all the events and everything up to the St. Matthews Clifton area. So here's what we have instead, and all this will be updated on the website and announced. We're still having our giant opening night film on Friday the 19th. It'll just be at the Ifor Theater at the Clifton Center. Tickets will now be $10. They were going to be $25, so that's great. So that'll give everyone a break that wants to come in for the film. There'll still be an opening reception before the film starts. It'll be moved to North End Cafe. I just met with the people today. They're very excited about being part of the film festival. There'll be food, drink, hors d'oeuvres, mingling with filmmakers, celebrities from the opening night film. So that'll be awesome. That'll take place from 5:30 to 7:30. The film is at 8. Q&A afterwards. And then the after party will be down in at the BBC in St. Matthew. So no one has to go downtown. We're relatively close to the Ramada, which is one of the hotel sponsors. Rooms are $61, $63 a night. So for people coming into town, we'll announce the opening night film. I can't do that until December 2nd, but I'll be at the press conference as well. We start getting all the information out to you. So just some minor changes. These things kind of happen, but on the good end, tickets become cheaper. A portion of the proceeds will still go to the charity, so we're really excited about that. Can't really announce that either. We've got some other things that we're working on, too. So for up-to-date information, just want to stay tuned to the website. Go check out DerbyCityFilmFest.com, and you also want to become our friend or our fan on Facebook, Derby City Film Fest, our fan page, and that's where you'll get all the updated information after you hear it on this show first. So really excited about the new prospects, kind of disappointed about the old prospects, but we're moving forward and everything is great. Everything turned around real quick. We'll have details on the pricing for the opening reception, food, and things like that. Working with the BBC on having specials for people that come to the festival. There'll be live music. They're working on possibly a tapping the Derby City Film Festival brew for the after parties, which will be Friday, and then the after party again will be on Saturday. So it's going to be a really great time. So check out DerbyCityFilmFest.com for all that information. I'll bring it to you as it happens. Derby City Film Festival is teaming up with the 12th Annual Jewish Film Festival and the 2nd Annual Wild and Scenic Film Festival to bring you Film Festival February. Go to FilmFestivalFebruaryLouisville.com, where we're cross-promoting all the festivals, which all take place in February within a week of each other. February 5th, which is a Friday, we're going to have a special opening preview of all the films at all the festivals, so you can come. Free food, drinks. It'll be at Riverbend Winery on South 10th Street, downtown in Louisville. It's during the trolley hop, so feel free to hop on, come on in. We're out trailers showing of all the different films and things like that. So that'll be February 5th. Jewish Film Festival is the week after. Our festival is the week after that. And wrapping up February with the Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival. So that'll be awesome. So FilmFestivalFebruaryLouisville.com. Bringing more information on all of that as it appears. Conglomeration. The Conglomeration Film Festival is is a science fiction convention that's here in Louisville. It's the 10th annual next year, April 9th through the 11th. Submissions are now open for the film festival portion of Conglomeration. Submissions will be taken through February 15th. Short films, 30 minutes or less, $10 submission fee, entry fee, sorry, and $15 for films over 30 minutes. Categories include fan films, monster creature films, anime, sci-fi. Sci-fi subcategories include space, medical, biological, occult, spiritual, supernatural, fantasy, and then another documentary category as well. Rules and submission forms are on the website, as well as general information about the convention. Go to conglomeration.info for more information. That's conglomeration.info for more information on that. Really excited about having the film festival portion to the ongoing convention, so that should really be good. Submissions will be taken until February 1st and will be announced by February 15th. So go to conglomeration.info for more information on that. The Louisville Film Society is dedicated to enriching and exposing greater Louisville to experimental, independent, classic, and international cinema through monthly screenings at 21C Hotel Museum, a monthly film series, and yearly flyover festival. The Louisville Film Society hopes to prompt discussion and new perspectives among a cross-cultural and cross-generational audience here in the Derby City. For upcoming screenings and film events sponsored by LFS, visit their website, www.louisvillefilm.org. Ongoing through December is the Global Lens Series presented in conjunction with the Muhammad Ali Center, so you want to check that out. I think that's on Saturdays and Sundays starting in December, so definitely want to go and check out the other events, louisvillefilm.org, for information on that. The Dark Woods Con, first annual, March 5th through the 7th, Pikeville, Kentucky, at the Landmark Inn. Movie celebrity guests scheduled to appear thus far, and trust me, I don't believe I have the most updated info, so David Goose, Lynn, if you're listening, send me the updated info for next week's show. But so far, Michael Berryman from The Hills Have Eyes 1 and 2, Devil's Rejects, Dick Warlock, Tiffany Shepis, Daniel Emery Taylor, Starkiller, no, sorry, that's another one, Jim O'Rear, that's in the film, sorry, and Al Snow, Bob Katz, Creepy Kentucky, and Uncle Bill, Tim Gross of bastardsofhorror.com, and many, many more. Visit darkwoodscon.com, that's darkwoodscon.com for more information on that. We'll bring David back on the show beginning of next year, talk more about that, but that's going to be March 5th through the 7th, 2010. Darkwoodscon.com. Don't go in alone. Divinity Rose and the Louisville Sub Rosa brings Louisville fanboys and girls a chance to prove which one has the bigger draw. In Louisville, it's Star Wars versus Star Trek. It's an ongoing rivalry, and the show has something for fans of either. It's going to be December 5th, which is Saturday. Evidently, back in July, they had a geek show, Episode 1, and Divinity made a promise to fanboys everywhere that if 100 people came out, she would dress up as an Orion slave girl. Well, over 150, 200 people came. So, now's your chance to see Divinity Rose dressed up as an Orion slave girl. Louisville improvisers Fender McLovin from Den of Sin and CW will be hand-serving up Star Wars and Star Trek trivia and prizes. It's going to be free admission. It's at Diamond Billiards in St. Matthews. For information, go to LouisvilleSubrosa.info. That's LouisvilleSubrosa.info. It's a great night, open mic, music, all kinds of great stuff. So that's Star Trek versus Star Wars, December 5th, which is Saturday. I think it starts at 8 or 9 and goes till 2 in the morning. So LouisvilleSubrosa.info for more information on that. We'll bring more information on this here in a second when we get our first guest. You're listening to Every City Film Chat on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Chris Rommel. Girl Number 3 will premiere at the Alley Theater on Washington Street on Thursday, December 17th at 7:30, featuring the talents of Julie Strebel, Todd Ziegler, Leah Roberts, Kent Carney, Jess White, Adam Pepper, that's not the whole list, Herschel's on, who's also the director, and Nathan Thomas Milner, who is the creator of Girl Number 3, which is originally a graphic novel. Tickets are $10, and we'll have DVDs available for sale at the screening. That's going to be December 17th at the Alley Theater, 1205 East Washington Street. 7:30 is the screening, and we'll get more information on that when Herschel and Julie join me. If you're in Lexington area, a good friend of the show, Claude Miles, is putting together a free screening, free indie film mini festival in December at Mia's up in Lexington, 127 North Limestone, Lexington, Kentucky. Free screenings of local films. Free tables with local filmmakers selling their films and other merchandise, food and drink specials by their host Mia's. A great time in between the holidays to come and socialize, actualize, visualize, and super fries. His words, not mine. Their lineup so far includes Legacy Zombie Movie, Treepan from Feather Italian Films, Runaways, Soup Kitchen from Silver Chain Films, Cornball Classics, Saucer Sex from Beyond, Zombre Ombre, and Zeppo Sinners from Beyond the Moon from Go Boy Films and Murder from Cineline Productions. Email shortfilm@insightbb.com for more information on that. That's going to be Saturday the 12th, starting at 6 to 2 in the morning. Mia's up in Lexington, 127 North Limestone Lane. They have a Facebook event page, so which I don't have that written down. So Claude Miles is his name, shortfilm@insightbb.com if you're up in Lexington on the 12th of December. And finally, friend of the show in Derby City Film Festival, juror Vin Morielli. VSM Casting has been asked to find two actors for a show on the Learning Channel. These would be no dialogue recreations of a scene from 1983. They're looking for an actor who resembles John Shatner, not William Shatner, but John Schnatter, Papa John. At the age of 24, as well as an actor who could play his father. Currently, no photo of his father is available. But if you look somewhat like Papa John and are between the ages of 45 and 60, you may be eligible. So if you look in the mirror and think that you could be John Schnatner's father, then this job is for you. They'll also have a pull a few paid extras from those listed on the VSM casting website. Shoot date is the 4th, which is next Friday. Only if you fit the description above, if you look like John Schnatner at 24 or his dad between 45 and 60, you can see photos of Papa John at papajohns.com. Go to vsmentertainment.com for information on this event casting, as well as Vin's Burning Up the Stage acting workshop. So go to vsmentertainment.com for information on that. That concludes this portion of the show. If you have any information, film screenings, auditions, film-related information in the region, includes Indiana and Tennessee, so on and so forth, you want to get that on the show, email us at derbycityfilmchat@yahoo.com, and we'll put it on this portion of the show. My first guest, his films include Shadows of Light, The Sirens. He's also on pre-production on Santa Boy with Scott Sullivan, friend of the show, and on several other fantasy-related films. His recent book, Crown of Vengeance, was just released in hardback and, I believe, paperback, and is available on his website. Also is author of Exodus Gate and the sequel to Exodus Gate, which will be released early 2010. He'll be doing a very special Joseph Beth Bookseller signing event on Thursday, December 10th from 7 to 9 on behalf of Crown of Vengeance. There'll be a filmmaker shooting footage for a documentary as well. There'll be a presentation introduction of cover artist, illustrator Matthew Perry and Amanda DeBord. I'm not sure where Joseph Beth Booksellers is, but I'm sure he will tell us. Go to StephenZimmer.com for information on that. Stephen, how are you?
Oh, very good, very good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Did I get all that correct, or mostly correct?
You got it mostly correct, yes, absolutely.
Where is Joseph Beth Booksellers? What state, part of town is that in?
It's right near the Fayette Mall area in Lexington, right there on Nicholasville Road, pretty close to the New Circle Road interchange. It's in, people are familiar with Lexington Green. It's the centerpiece bookstore there. It's actually one of the largest independent bookstores in the country in terms of just sheer size. And so, you can't miss it if you pull into Lexington Green just right off Nicholasville Road there.
Awesome. So it's going to be December 10th from 7 to 9. Be signing copies of Crown of Vengeance.
We're going to be doing a lot of giveaways as well. Everybody that attends, Matt and I are going to hook up an exclusive kind of collectible print that's going to be designated for that night. So everybody that comes will get a exclusive print, and they will be up for some giveaways too.
Cool. So are you a writer, an author, or are you a filmmaker?
I am a writer at heart, and that covers both, for the novel world and for filmmaking. So that's my foundation. So yes, I would say I'm a writer first and foremost, and then that takes me to, being an author and being a filmmaker.
Did you start working on the novel portion of writing before you started working on the screenplay version, or did it kind of blur lines, or where did you get started with first in the writing?
Well, the odd thing is that I actually had been writing prose and novel, type stuff for longer than I've been doing the screenwriting, but just that I actually got to get to a point where, I could do some projects that, actually got released first in film before I, finally was able to get the, the books published and work with the editor that I have, Amanda DeBord. And oddly enough, the novel writing stuff is actually predates the film side of things, but the film side of things broke through first.
Do you see a lot more, I led to this in my intro for the show, and I guess we can talk about this now. Do you, because of the genre that you write in, and I'm helping to put together a sci-fi film festival for a convention here in town, and the one thing that you don't hear of a lot of, sci-fi fantasy like you would think of, like, Lord of the Rings type, or, straight D&D-esque type independent films. Does that thought process, depending upon the project you want to work on, is that kind of, there's more avenue to write in that kind of genre than there is thus far in independent filmmaking?
For me, it's just the passion that I have, and it just started at a very young age when my mother read me the Hobbit at the age of probably about 7, and so I blame her for it. She kind of infected me, and I never got off it. So it's definitely. That's definitely the direction I would like to go. Obviously, with independent film, it puts a lot lot of demands on the production, because obviously when you're doing fantasy, there's a, you know, certain demand for, you know, costuming and special effects and, you know, makeup effects. And there's a lot more that, you know, gets kind of pulled into it just because of the genre. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to be able to, you know, tackle something like that. And so I'm hoping, like I said, you know, with 2010 rolling around, I do have a green light on a short fantasy film that's based on an author's novel. It's a section from his book. We should be able to announce that very soon. Not able to announce the author just yet, but we are going to do a short in the spring that is definitely going to be full on, you know, medieval fantasy. And then I'm, like I said, also I might have told you in my notes that I was, you know, also working in development. And it's a, you know, this is a lot longer down the road, but something that best can be described as something that's a Conan-esque kind of movie set in the Viking Age. And that's something that's kind of the ball's definitely rolling. And it's just that, you know, it's going to be a little bit longer to develop that one because it's a full feature.
Awesome. That's really great. So I'm looking forward to that too. It's great to see independent, you know, hear about independent films, you know, that are trying to branch out and to do something, you know, other than, you know, a very dialogue heavy, you know, drama, you know, or a, you know, you know, I don't know, some sort of artistic experimental type film. Is it something that you're seeing is, you know, when you're talking with people and getting, you know, going into the stuff as far as like a Conan-esque, you know, feature is in a medieval sci-fi fantasy kind of film, is the technology becoming more readily available for you to, you know, make some of these things a little more of reality? When you're dealing with the, you know, a writing aspect of it, it seems like you're dealing with the person that's reading it, and it's, you know, they're creating the vision of what it is in their head, and then the translation to that into something on a screen, you know, is cost a lot more money. Are you all looking at it from a technological standpoint that the technology is becoming cheaper and better as far as a lot of films are using more green screen and stuff like that? Or are you looking at it strictly from a, you know, just a, you know, flat out, you know, no green screen, no special effects, but an actual, like, you know, costume oriented kind of pieces?
Well, in my situation, I've been real blessed to have some very dear friends who are incredibly skilled with all facets of special effects, and that's digital and makeup effects, and that's Matt Perry, Sven Granlund, and Dave Wortman. You know, the core guys that work with all the Cineline production stuff. They recently worked on Jacob Ennis' film, you know, Red River, which you know, the stuff I've seen looks absolutely dynamite. And but they worked with me on Shadows, Light, and Sirens, and I also was able to work with them on Murderer. And but they just have an amazing ability to, you know, Matt, of course, is also my cover artist and illustrator with my book stuff. So, you know, we work really well together. And because of, like I said, that kind of collaboration, it enables us to try to, you know, tackle, you know, some things that you might not normally be able to tackle on a smaller budget, because, you know, we got a nice group of can do kind of attitude people. And anyone that's worked with Matt and Sven or Dave can vouch for that, because they, you know, like I said, they're getting around and contributing to quite a few projects. And I know Sven was up working with Claude Miles on a Civil War piece, and, you know, they're definitely getting around to a whole lot of different things. So, but with me, yeah, I mean, they help make the fantasy stuff possible. And that's, you know, and then, you know, with clothing and period clothing and things like that, I am, I've done a lot of research in that area. So I plan on working really close with, you know, some costume design people to get that right. But when it comes to, you know, definitely the, you know, the special effects and combat kind of stuff, yeah, we're definitely going to be working with them all the way.
It sounds like there's a lot more planning. I mean, there's always planning involved with making a film, but it sounds like there may be, you know, it sounds like you got a really good direction that you're going with as far as what you need, but it sounds like there's a lot more planning than maybe there would have been on your, on Shadows of Light or the Sirens. Am I wrong on that, or is there, you know, an equal amount of planning going into the pre-production part?
Well, there will be a lot. And one thing with Shadows, like, there was a lot of pre-production involved, because that one, we had about seven or eight different creature designs in it. It was, you know, it's a supernatural thriller, kind of modern fantasy. It's not a horror film. It's something sometimes gets misconstrued, but it's definitely meant to be seen as a modern fantasy kind of film. And it had about seven or eight different creatures. We had a djinn. We had several types of demons. We had an angel. Had a lot of different things in it, and it, you know, and we shot it on 22 locations in around the Lexington area. So that was my trial by fire, you know, in terms of working on a very, very small micro budget and tackling a film with that many effects and locations and things like that. So that sort of, you know, definitely got me, you know, a full appreciation for, you know, all phases of the film production process and, you know, all the, you know, things that, you know, I learned then applied then, you know, and, you know, I'm, of course you grow with every single project you do. And so, you know, I'm definitely looking to, you know, take, you know, new steps with stuff coming up. So, but pre-production is everything. I mean, if you don't take your time and be patient with that, I mean, you can get yourself into a mess very quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's something that, you know, I try to impress upon any filmmakers. It's not just a showing up kind of thing, you know.
Right.
Just, you know, got my cameras. Like, if you want to shoot in that kind of style, in a run-and-gun kind of style, I mean, that's one thing once you get on set, but it's a lot of, you know, planning beforehand, or you end up with a lot of people standing around going, hey, what do we do now? So, I mean, it definitely sounds, you know, in any film, no matter the genre, there's a good portion of pre-production planning. Is this something that, how did you get into, did you actively seek out for your first film getting into the business, or did someone come to you saying, hey, I like your writing, have you ever thought about turning this into a film?
Well, I knew, I've always been self-motivated because I wasn't, you know, born in a, you know, to a millionaire family, and, you know, so, you know, if I was to get anywhere, I knew I have to, you know, kind of hit the ground and work hard. And so, you know, I am self-motivated person, so, you know, I'm kind of an instigator of sorts. So, you know, I saw people around me that I knew could do the job well, and I knew I could pull together a crew, and I knew there was great acting talent. You know, we worked with some, you know, great, you know, talent like Tucky Williams, was one of the leads, Tom Phillips, who now lives in Los Angeles, and I knew there were some great people around here, and, you know, Scott Sullivan too was one of the main characters. But we, you know, we just had to, you know, kind of catalyze it. And so, yeah, I ended up kind of pulling a group together to go, you know, try to, you know, initially raise, you know, the amount of funds necessary so that we could have a get the grip truck and a good gaffer involved, and Mark Gurevich worked on the project with us, and, you know, we did, you know, get a group together to raise the very meager budget that we worked with, and from that point, you know, then got into a nice pre-production phase, and, you know, next one thing followed the other. But, you know, that's something that I definitely tried to catalyze, but once we got the ball rolling, it was definitely like all film projects, a kind of team, you know, definitely a team collaboration.
Yeah. Did you, as far as your writing goes, you're working on your Crown of Vengeance is the first in the Fires in Eden series, which is your second, trilogy or second series of a different name. My first question is, why did you not go with book two of the Rising Dawn saga and then go straight into Crown of Vengeance? Or is it just one of those things where you write what comes into your head and the direction it takes you, and you kind of go back and forth to stuff?
Well, I've been working actually on both series for quite a while. They were actually the first drafts I've actually got on an IBM. It's a 286, a PS2 from back from the mid 90s. So I mean, these things have been percolating for a while. But I'm very self-critical, and they weren't to the point where they could be published. And so it took me a long time to work through them. Get, you know, and by the time I got to the point where I thought I could take them to an editor, I actually had enough material for the first, you know, few books in each series already drafted, and, you know, definitely the rest of the series pretty well, you know, mapped out. And so, you know, when I was working with Amanda, my editor, you know, we discussed a plan where, you know, we would, you know, go for an aggressive thing because I had the books done, and it's a, you know, merely a matter of, you know, getting, you know, the editing work done with Amanda, and then, you know, we can get them out. So we could, you know, tackle it. You know, it's not like I have to write the books from scratch each time.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first, you know, we try to get every spring, one in the Rising Dawn saga out, and the goal is every fall, early winter, to get one of the other series out, and they are distinctly different. One series is a modern fantasy, kind of epic fantasy, which is, you know, kind of centers around a radio show host. It's kind of like a, he's got a show on the paranormal UFOs, and he falls into possession of a virtual reality simulator that turns out to be kind of a time-transcending device that, you know, demonic powers are using to try to bring back the Nephilim from, you know, before the Great Flood. And in my series, they're, you know, monstrous, you know, because they're the offspring of fallen angels and humans. So, yeah, so that series is definitely got its own flavor. And then Crown of Vengeance is more of a, you know, the Fires in Eden series, more of a true, you know, Tolkien-esque, you know, big epic medieval kind of series, you know, true high fantasy. And so the, you know, the appeals to different readers within the genre. Some, you know, there's a certain group that likes the one type of fantasy. There's others that like the other. And, you know, and then there's a group that, you know, definitely crosses over and likes both. But it definitely, you know, we're not hitting the same exact target with each one. So it's not, you know, being too overzealous, I'd say.
That's great. You kind of answered my question, though. I was going to follow that up with any ideas of turning your own books into films, but it sounds like massive budgets of epic proportions to kind of
definitely have to wait to take a few more dimes in the budget before we could do justice with those. Which is, you know, it's fun, you know, it's good because you're not limited when you do a book. You know, you're definitely, you know, you take the ball and run with it, you know, your ideas. On the film side of things, there's realities, and unfortunately we couldn't tackle that, you know, those two books yet. So,
well, I mean, it's awesome if you keep it going on the film end and get to, you know, that's how it works. If you get the people interested that have the money and they're saying, well, we have money, do you have something bigger? You can be like, yeah, I got these books. I could turn them into films. You got, you know, 40 mil, you know, I can make a nice film.
When you get 40 million, then yeah, I'll make sure I get to talk to you then.
Okay. not me. If I find someone that has 40 million interested in doing some sci-fi, I will definitely send them your way. Stephen, go to StephenZimmer.com for information on your appearances, book detail, you know, films and things like that. Stephen, I really appreciate you being on the show. Keeping up to date on what's going on, and I'd love to have you back. You know, maybe after the next book comes out, and we can talk more.
Yeah, thank you very much. And as Jerry Williams would say, we have steel and wizardry. So hopefully I'll see everybody on December 10th here.
Sounds good. It's going to be December 10th up at Joseph Beth Booksellers in Lexington.
It's going to be fun. And if you can make it down from yourself, definitely come by and see me.
I will try. No promises, but if not, have fun anyhow.
Take care. Thank you very much.
Author, filmmaker, extraordinaire. I don't think that is too light of a title. He makes films. He writes books. Awesome. Stephen Zimmer, go to StephenZimmer.com for information on everything that he's got working on. You can get books. If you're up at Lexington on December 10th, go to Joseph Beth Booksellers from 7 to 9 p.m. My next guests, their film is Girl Number 3. Go to GirlNumber3.com for information, trailers, all that good stuff. They just had the world premiere, was this past weekend, up at the Horror Hound Convention Festival in Cincinnati. December 17th, they bring the film to Louisville, the Alley Theater here in Louisville. Should be a good time. Herschel, having appeared in over 150 productions. I'm going to read your – pardon me, I'm going to read your bio real quick. Having appeared in over 150 productions with dozens of theater companies in Kentucky and a region, as well as appearing in many local, regional, and national television, internet commercials, and in the feature films How Do You Look to Me and Dreamer, I decided the time was right to try his hand on the other side of the camera. Along with his wife in 2006, they formed Renegade Art Productions, and their first project, Murder in the Hill, was written by Herschel, played for 2 months at the historic Waverly Hills Sanitarium. Awesome. His debut film, Girl Number 3, was, once again, just this past weekend at Horror Hound Film Festival up in Cincinnati, and will be on DVD in December. He also works on the Necroville Picture Show, which will be returning for its second season starting in 2010. Check out necrovilletv.com. He has degrees in theater and speech communications from IUSE. And also actress Julie Strebel was born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky. She originally became interested in acting after watching an episode of Home Improvement and deciding that she wanted to play Jonathan Taylor Thomas's girlfriend on the show. While she's still yet to meet Mr. Thomas, let alone play his girlfriend, she has since grown as an actress in the Louisville, Southern Indiana community. These are her words, not me. while Girl Number 3 marks her first film, she has an extensive theater background and has received a theater scholarship at IUS. Julie Strebel and Herschel Zond, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Awesome. Julie, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Strebel, yes. Long.
Strebel, okay. I wanted to double-check that. So how'd the premiere go?
It was very exciting. This is my first film. I'm used to doing actual theater. It was cool. It was very, very cool.
How was the Herschel? How was the response from the people that saw it? Was it what you were hoping and expecting it to be?
Well, as I've only really worked on the television show, and I had a couple of short films that we worked on early last year, and I was obviously very nervous to have a feature film for the first time, thinking, you know, of course, as most filmmakers do, nobody's going to like this. And I was utterly blown away that so many people got it and got what we were doing. And we actually were asked to do an interview with Not a Living Podcast, writer Nathan Thomas Milliner and I, and they told us that, you know, they review thousands of films every year, and they think they normally can peg any film within 5 minutes, and every time they thought they had our film pegged, we went a different direction and kept surprising them all the way to the end, and it was just absolutely spectacular.
Now, the film is actually based off of a graphic novel, and I don't have was it Nathan Thomas Milliner, like you said. What was it like converting a graphic novel into film? It seems to be a soup du jour in Hollywood. I myself am an old school comic book fan, and I can see how it takes care of a lot of the storyboarding for you in some respects. What was it like actually turning a written piece, a graphic novel into a film?
Well, I was absolutely blessed to have Nathan Thomas Milliner with me because he's just got such a grand vision. And what's interesting about the book is it's actually a graphic novella, so it's more along the lines 20 to 25 illustrated images with a long-form short story with it. So when we got down to actually doing it, we really got into the script, and I was very adamant when I first had my very first meeting with Nathan that we had to stay true to the material, because I felt then and I feel now it was one of the best horror stories I've ever read. And if you're an old-school comic fan, you probably have felt the frustration that many of us have going to see Hollywood productions of comic book movies that we love and being disappointed. I was very adamant that if we were going to do this, we were going to stay absolutely true. And we actually made it our goal to take every single frame from the comic book and re-represent them on film. And we actually were able to do that, and that's kind of a little surprise in our ending credits. We actually do side-by-side comparisons of Nate's work as opposed to my work in the film, and they are absolutely spot on. I've even been impressed sometimes looking at them, how close we really got.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's definitely, it's hard sometimes, and I don't know. I've never worked off somebody else's material, but I've talked to other people that have. And was there did you both have the same, was there ever a conflict on the vision as far as, some writers hear about stories where people read the book, and since you're dealing with more of a novella and it doesn't translate well into the film, usually because the writer has, a hand into something that really doesn't translate well into film, or vice versa, something that, doesn't translate from film back into it. Was there any conflict with you all working together as far as, making sure you're both on the same page, or did it just kind of hit the ground running and, that was just the way it was?
We both had a very clear, concise idea of what we wanted, and we did butt heads a little bit, I won't lie, because, nothing's easy, when you have an artist as brilliant as Nathan who has probably the most vast knowledge of horror film of any human being I have ever met. I mean, you name it, he has seen it. International, foreign, indie budget, low budget, high budget, he knows it all. And he wanted all these very specific things. And he knew what he wanted as far as the script goes, but then when it actually came to translating it, he, you know, always working in the written page, in the two-dimensional page, he didn't really know how to bring it onto a three-dimensional format with the screen, and we were able to really combine our strengths and figure out, you know, this works here and this works there, and he had his written word, and, you know, being theater people, Julie and I both really were able to work with the timing, and it was actually commented on by the filmmaker that was on set with me one day that I looked like I was directing theater, and I said, well, yeah, I am directing theater because that's what I do, and I know how to direct theater. And but it really does show in the film that we did pay attention to pacing. We did pay attention to the timing of the dialogue and how it played out and how Julie's reactions with the other cast members on screen, you know, it does have a very theatrical feel to it, a lot like the old noir horror films, you know, back in the day. And the film is presented in black and white as the comic is because we wanted, again, pay homage to the original work. And Nate was very complimentary on everything that we really did to try and homage to his work and to the work of horror filmmakers and writers that he has grown up loving and been inspired by, as I have I.
How did, Julie, how did working on your first, how much of a benefit was it working on your first film and making the transition from theater to work with a director that does theater?
It was very, well, Herschel and I have been personal friends for a few years now. We actually met, and my bio says we actually met doing a Funny Thing Happen in the Way of the Forum at IUS. I'm a student there, too. And so it's easier working with him just because of that. Because we're close in life. But, yeah, the fact that he understands how an actor can do the stage theater thing. He worked with me really well. He was very patient.
it always helps.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm a slow learner, but I'm very meticulous, and so he helped. He definitely helped me a lot.
Was it your all's working relationship in theater, Herschel? You went to, you know, because of your experience with working with Julie in the theater aspect of it, did you go to her first, or was she your, did you have any trepidation about putting a theater person, not, you know, having, I have a theater background myself and working with other people, it's a different, you know, theater is always out because you're dealing with an entire, you know, audience trying to project out, and where film is more in, what came into play with working with deciding to work with Julie in the film, knowing that, you know, she has only a theater background. Not that there's anything wrong with only having a theater background, but just the differences in translating that to film.
Well, yeah, and sometimes it really doesn't work. I know Quentin Tarantino went and did a Broadway show and got booed off stage. So, you know, not always does it happen that a theater actor can go to film and vice versa. When we started casting the film, my wife and I, Mary Ellen Real, who also co-produced the movie with me as the co-producer of Renegade Art Productions, we have a kind of a unspoken policy that we don't like to hire actors because we find actors kind of a pain sometimes. So we generally get all of our cast members that we can from just people that we know. I try and find somebody who can, you know, tell a good story, and I will cultivate them and get them on film and really work with them and direct them, and we end up getting really good performances out of non-actors. With the case of Max, who's Julie's character in the piece, we knew that we had to have an actress because the journey that she goes from this light, bubbly, happy college student ending up into kind of taking this descent into madness that she does, we knew we had to have somebody with real acting chops and a real acting background. I had worked with Julie on A Funny Thing Happened the Way to the Forum, and then we kind of took about a six-month break, and I didn't see her, and then we met up again at auditions for Sight and Sound Productions' Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and we ended up getting cast opposite each other again. I was playing Jekyll and Hyde, and she was playing Annie, our lovely lady of the night, we should say. And, you know, she's the blunt one. I love her for her bluntness. And then, you know, we worked off and on again. She was in Murder on the Hill with me at Waverly Hills, and, you know, I brought her in. I used to work the haunted houses at Waverly Hills, and we brought her up there. And then we got to casting the movie, and Nathan and I were bouncing back and forth with actresses. And, you know, we knew a lot of the local people, and we kept polling and trying to get people out there and sending out audition notices, and we had all these people say they're going to come. Casting day got there. We all were really excited, had the camera set up, ready to shoot some audition footage, and Julie walked in. She was the first person we saw. and she was the last person we saw. Nobody else showed up. And
wow.
I was, you know, Nate was blown away by her. I mean, I was blown away by her, too. Don't get me wrong. She was perfect for it right out the get-go, but my trepidation was, can I really embark on this journey with a lead actress that I only saw one person audition for the role? And I really struggled with that. In the end, my wife said, suck it up. She's the right person for the role, cast her. And that's what I did. And I have never looked back and never regretted it. She turned in a spectacular performance.
So were you always going to show up, Julie, or was Herschel just going to have no one in the film? Or was when you're on your way to the auditions, was it actually something that you were, you know, making the transition from? Well, I guess let me put it a different way. What drew you to wanting to audition, you know, to show up for a film having, you know, extensive, you know, theater? I mean, you're talking about, you know, Crimes of the Heart, The Funny Thing Happened with Forum, Proof, you know, House of Blues, you know, The Shadow Box. I mean, these are some serious theater pieces. You know, what's intrigued you about, you know, doing film and showing up to the audition?
Well, I've been wanting to try my hand at film for a while just because that's something that most colleges you can't do as an actor if you're a theater major or something. Because, I mean, like IUS, all we do is theater. We'll do musicals, dramas, whatever, but there's no TV or filming experience. And like you said earlier, it's a huge difference. You know, because when you're doing film, you have these little range of the frames you have to act in. And Herschel and I actually had a couple of moments where I was moving around in a frame and he was, okay, everything's too much. And, you know, I had to reel it back in. And, you know, on stage, you have to make it big and film it subtle. And so I really wanted to practice or, I guess, get some kind of experience doing film of some kind. Just because if I'm better at that, then I want to pursue that. And if I suck at it, then I want to leave it alone, say I tried it, and stick with theater.
She doesn't suck at it, by the way, for those who are listening.
I've seen the trailer and know from what I've seen you don't suck at acting, at least.
No, but what really drew me in about this is I am not a whore when it comes to acting, in that I will not just do whatever. I'm sure if I was like a starving artist, you have to do whatever it takes me, and sure, I would do pretty much anything. But if I didn't really, really like the story, again, especially knowing that Herschel is his first film.
I love Herschel. He's talented as hell, but it's his first film.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I, first of all, had enough faith in him as a director, because he's directed me before, obviously. But second of all, I love this story. I love Max, and I can relate to her on lots of levels.
Did you get to read the script before you showed up to audition? Is that one of the reasons for it, or did you not see it until you...
I don't remember. I read a little. I don't think it was... Was it completed then? I don't even remember. I don't think it was completed yet. Well, I had the comic book. He sent me the comic book, and obviously we elaborated extensively to actually make a feature-length film out of it. But, what really drew me in and encouraged me to go audition was I love Max.
What was it about the character Herschel you mentioned earlier, the journey that it took in finding somebody that was able to, you know, grow into the part from, you know, the beginning to the end, which anyone that, you know, you've got your character needs to have reversals and you become a different character than it was from the beginning. What was it, you know, in the character that drew you? Was it just that, or was it just something that you never, you know, just sounds like, and from what I've seen and heard from the film, I have not read the novella, and looking over what you sent me, it seems like this character is completely different from any other character that you've played on stage. Was that a part of one of the reasons why you wanted to be a part of it?
Yes. And I like a good challenge. I would much rather be an actress who's like Johnny Depp, who can do pretty much anything brilliantly, as opposed to, I'm pretty, I play the lover. You know, that's boring. And that's what really, I was like, oh, this is challenging. This is going to be hard at times. And, you know, because I think our characters are similar. I'm similar to Max, so that made it a little easier as far as trying to bring out emotions and stuff. But, I mean, I just, I would like to think that if I were kidnapped and taken to an abandoned warehouse, this is what I would do. I would love to think that that would be me, the person who, because I kind of am like that in real life. Like, in real life, I'm a veterinary assistant. I'm the person who pulls over on the side of the road when I see a hurt animal. I pulled off the highway and I've stopped traffic on 65 during rush hour in downtown Louisville to help a dog. So that's just kind of how I am in real life. So
it's kind of easier to transition into that, you know, at least the thought process that character may want to go through.
Yes. It was very challenging, obviously. Like, crying on cue was hard. But, I mean, it was a fun challenge, and it, because I was able to relate, made it easier in a way, too.
Herschel, what was it like, we talked to, we talked briefly about, the after you were done some of the shots, you wanted to definitely to keep the art of the original material and the way it looked and translating that into the film. What was it like needing to expand? I'm assuming that if you made the film just based off of what the novella is, a 25 page, you probably would have had a much shorter film. What was some of the challenges dealing with working from source material and translating that into film that were there any challenges in trying to make it into a feature-length film?
Vast and many and varied. We did originally intend to simply make the novella into a movie. The original intent was to make a 20-minute short film. And by the time we got everything finished, the movie ended up being 62 minutes long. We wanted to add a little bit more of the art. Nate wanted to add in a little bit of new material for himself, and he wrote one new character, and by the end of the first edit, we had 62 minutes. And I said, well, we're now officially, and as far as, the film festival circuit, we're in the feature-length land, but a 62-minute film is not worth most people's time. Most people won't watch it. So I called Nate up, and I said, Nate, we need more. Write me more. And the novella is completely told through first person, through Max's first person. You never leave Max's head. And that ended up being the hardest part of trying to translate it into a film, because everything that you see in the novella, you see through Max's eyes from beginning to end. So what we ended up doing is we decided that we really couldn't just keep telling more story from Max's perspective. We needed to get a break from her. So what we ended up doing was go back, and her captors have an entire subplot storyline that we added in that supplements everything that's going on. They begin to realize that there's something lurking in the dark coming to get them. So they kind of become the cast around the alien, if you will, if you want to go into aliens. But that was where we kind of started to expand upon the story, and by the end of it, we really had something that was a perfect homage to the original material, but was completely original in and of itself.
What was it like, Julie, when Herschel called you up and was like, hey, we're not done. we need to shoot some more stuff. I mean, was that the process? I mean, were you all just done with everything and all of a sudden, editing, or were you editing while you kind of went? Or, I mean, what was that conversation like?
It happened at a screening. I held a screening for the cast, the primary, the principal cast, and the producers. We all got together and we screened a 62-minute version of the film. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, I said, "So we've got a really good story, and the last 5 minutes is hack, hack, scream, kill, end of movie." And I said, "That's not going to work. So we're going to go back and reshoot some stuff." And I think from all the utter hell that Julie went through on the first part of two, because we shot this movie in January of 2009 during the ice storm.
Nice.
So, and she's running around in this little French maid costume that's, 16-inch thick nylon in 13-degree weather and being a trooper. So I was afraid to ask her, but I don't know exactly what she felt about. She's never told me that, so I'll let her.
what did you think when he called you up and was like, hey, we're shooting?
Well, because I saw the screening, and I actually couldn't remember how that process went, because it all kind of blurred together in my memory, so I'm glad that he answered it. But, it was fun to film, but like he said, it had its own physical challenges. My biggest thing was coming home, I would have knots all down my back, because I was so cold from holding the axe, like gripping it. I just had knots and knots in my muscles, but when he called and said we have to go back and do stuff, I mean, I had seen the screening, and I agreed, yeah. And my whole thing is, my name's on this, my face is on this. I certainly do not want to be attached for my very first film to a piece of crap. So, and it would not have been a piece of crap back then. It's just, it's really good now.
Yeah.
And I'm a movie snob, so I think it's really good. So,
what kind of challenges was it? What was the challenges in acting in that kind of frigid, you know, Icelandic kind of temperature? I mean, did that just add something completely? I'm assuming you don't look like you're sitting there freezing through the entire film. What kind of challenges did that pose?
Well, what's kind of funny is, I was barefoot. I was wearing nylon pantyhose barefoot on concrete.
Herschel, you got workman's comp on this film or what?
Hey, you know what I always told my cast is, this is what I do to my friends. This is not what I do to people I don't like.
Don't piss them off.
Barefoot French maid costume, 20 degrees.
Yeah.
Action.
Oh, the cake topper is our makeup guys, because I did my actual makeup, and then we had, awesome special effects for, like, my blood and stuff. And Eric, great guy. He brought in this pump bucket thing to spray me with blood so that I have splatters on me. I look lovely that way. And when he brought it in, it had been out in his garage all night, so it was slushy. So he's spraying me with icy, slushy, fake blood while I'm already half naked on the 16-degree concrete floor. And he's laughing about it, and I'm just like, I love you too, Eric. Thanks. Thanks.
And I'm sure Herschel is behind the camera in a parka and gloves.
Oh, yeah,
going,
No.
He was cold too. I mean, they were all bundled up, but they were all still cold anyway. And no, they had heaters and blankets. It wasn't like I was just for 8 hours a day in this weather. I mean, they had blankets and these big propane heaters.
Yeah, but he didn't put on a French maid costume and wander around barefoot while he was filming. I'm assuming.
No,
so
like,
I mean,
he did cut himself.
Oh, okay.
I actually did stab myself.
Yeah,
he had
some physical trauma to deal with.
you're forgiven then. You're forgiven then.
yeah.
The Louisville film screening is going to be Thursday, December 17th at 7:30 p.m. at the Alley Theater on 1205 East Washington Street. Are the tickets available now? Can they have to get them at the box office? Where do they need to go to get tickets?
Pick them up. They're still getting everything set up, but just keep up with girlnumber3.com, www.girlnumber3.com. All that information will be up. The tickets will be $10 at the door, and I don't know whether Alley Theater has anything set up yet. I'm still working out all the kinks. As you said at the top of the show, you're always trying to wheel and deal and work out the next thing, because we had a screening location, and it was lost, and then the great people at Alley Theater were able to come back and help us and do our first screening for us, which was here in Louisville, which we're very, very proud, because we've been, talking about this movie and blogging about this movie for 2 years, and it's really going to be a lot of fulfillment to bring it back to Louisville where it was shot and let everybody who was a part of it experience it and be there when they get to experience it.
Do you have any other plans of screenings or a festival, or what's going on with the film next after the Louisville screening?
We were invited to the Horror Hound Weekend in Indianapolis, which will be the 26th, 27th, and 28th of March, 2010.
Awesome.
We've been invited to Dark Carnival Film Festival, and we had a lot of people come and, were asking us to be a part of their film festival and submit to their film festival. We will be submitting to Derby City. Actually, I'm sitting here at the computer color correcting some things that I didn't like from the first screening, so as soon as I get done with that, you'll be getting a copy of the movie yourself.
Postmarked by next Tuesday, you'll be fine. So that's awesome.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be postmarked by Friday if I have my way. But yeah, we're going to be submitting it all over as many festivals as we can possibly get it.
Well, awesome, Herschel, Julie. I really appreciate you being on the show. Thanks, thanks so much. Keep me up to date with all the stuff, and hope all goes well on December 17th. That's Julie Strebel and Herschel Zahn, Girl Number 3. .com for more information on the film. Thanks, guys, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Wow!
Steven Zimmer, StevenZimmer.com for information on our first guest, GirlNumber3.com, NecroVilleTV.com, Julie Strebel, Herschel's on, December 17th, Alley Theater, Girl Number 3, Louisville premiere. Next week, my guests are actors David Haney and Richard Pfister. As we said, you got 1 week left to get your film submission in for the Derby City Film Festival. Go to derbycityfilmfest.com. Keep up to date. The film is on. It's strong like a Donkey Kong. Conglomeration submissions open until December 1st. Conglomeration.info for more information on that. Past shows on iTunes, upcoming information. Show information, go to bobrogersgroup.com for information on all of this. Film productions, news and notes. BobRogersGroup.com. What better place than here? What better time than now? Happy Thanksgiving to all of you all. I appreciate you all listening, and I'm very thankful for it. Remember, if you're drinking, don't drive. If you're driving, don't drink. Viva!